Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So President Obama and leading Republicans seem increasingly at odds on the language they use about a possible war with Iran. We'll hear some of that language now and talk about it with New York Times chief Washington correspondent and WNYC contributor David Sanger. Good morning, David. Did you stay up watching the Alaska primary returns?
You know, I decided that I could live without Alaska. I wanted to see what Ohio was going to be like, but looks like Ohio was a tighter race than Alaska anyway.
That's right. So let me begin with a clip of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking Monday to the Israel-America Public Affairs Committee conference, suggesting that Congress authorize a military strike against Iran.
This authorization, if enacted, will ensure the nation and the world that our leaders are united in confronting Iran, and will undermine the perception that the U.S. is wounded or retreating.
So is McConnell, in effect, saying Congress should declare a war on Iran today?
You know, what it reminded me of when I heard him talk about this authorization was the Iraq War authorization that took place in 2002, in which a lot of people voted for, including a lot of Democrats. And then there had been actually some earlier authorizations that suggested but didn't quite walk up to use of force. And it's a very easy thing for Congress to do because these authorizations don't go into effect unless the President of the United States decides to go do the attack, number one. And number two is there's a lot of dispute about whether or not they even fulfill the requirements of the War Powers Act. So it's a way, it's sort of a free vote in Congress to sound tough but not have to take responsibility for it, which is why I think you heard the president push back pretty hard at his press conference yesterday when he was talking about the candidates, not about Mr. McConnell, and saying, you know, it's pretty easy to talk lightly about war, but when you actually have to manage something like the Iranian nuclear program, it gets a little more complicated.
So let's get right to that contrast and play that clip. By the way, I think I misspoke and called McConnell the Senate Majority Leader. He's the Minority Leader, Democrats do have the majority in the Senate. But here is the president from his news conference yesterday. This is an extended excerpt, as we often do here, so we don't just play a 10-second soundbite. This is about a minute and a half. Speaking back seemingly to McConnell on what we just heard, but explicitly to the Republican presidential candidates.
Those folks don't have a lot of responsibilities. They're not commander in chief. And when I see the casualness with which some of these folks talk about war, I'm reminded of the costs involved in war. I'm reminded of the decision that I have to make in terms of sending our young men and women into battle, and the impacts that has on their lives, the impact it has on our national security, the impact it has on our economy. This is not a game. There's nothing casual about it. And, you know, when I see some of these folks who have a lot of bluster and a lot of big talk, but when you actually ask them specifically what they would do, it turns out they repeat the things that we've been doing over the last 3 years. It indicates to me that that's more about politics than actually trying to solve a difficult problem. Now, the one thing that we have not done is we haven't launched a war. If some of these folks think that it's time to launch a war, they should say so. And they should explain to the American people exactly why they would do that and what the consequences would be.
President Obama from his news conference yesterday. That's politics and policy both. But David, can you remember a sitting president so vocally trying to resist pressure to start a war?
It's pretty remarkable. And what it tells you is how big a circle we've come from the days of Afghanistan and Iraq. Two wars that, particularly in the Iraq case, you'll remember, had fairly overwhelming support in the polling that was done ahead of it, and very little discussion along the lines that the president just offered there. I think what the president's tapping into is a recognition that Americans of all stripes are somewhat tired of 10 years of war and occupation. And the fact of the matter is that in the Iranian nuclear case, nobody, not even those who are the most hawkish here, are talking about putting ground troops down. But the president was making the point that once you start up an action against the Iranian nuclear sites, you really don't know how the whole thing's going to play out. There are all kinds of interesting theories. There are all kinds of models of what might happen. But the fact of the matter is, this is an unpredictable regime, and they might strike back in direct ways, more likely indirect ways, but you really don't know what you're getting into. And I think the president is saying, let's exhaust all options. And that's where he and the Israelis have some fundamental disagreements, as I wrote in this morning's paper, about just how much time is left.
You had a fascinating article in today's New York Times, and my guest is their chief Washington correspondent, David Sanger, on basically if there's an agreement between the U.S. and Israel that they know that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon, that there will be an attack to stop it. I think President Obama has even said that pretty explicitly. How do you know? And we went through Iraq 10 years ago where they thought they knew, that they had uncontrovertible proof that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And then guess what? Uh-uh. So is there a disagreement between the United States and Israel on what the evidence would be to tell them that Iran had reached that turning point, that threshold past which the U.S. or Israel would attack?
Maybe, Brian, it's useful to talk briefly about what they agree on and then what they disagree on.
Good.
What they agree on is Iran doesn't have a weapon now. The U.S. believes that there has been no fundamental decision made by the supreme leader in Iran to go the final steps and produce that weapon. The Israelis believe fundamentally that that decision, if it hasn't been made explicitly, has been made implicitly. And you heard Prime Minister Netanyahu say as much when he spoke to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee in his own speech earlier this week. So that's number one. Number two, there was a disagreement about whether or not you would know if the Iranians decided to go that last mile. The Americans say we'd see it. They'd have to throw out inspectors. You would detect from scientists who are informing back to the U.S. or Israel or others, you'd probably detect some increased amount of activity. You might see testing of the conventional explosives that one used to detonate a nuclear weapon. So the U.S. is fairly confident they'd see it. The Israelis say you can't be that confident. And yes, they know the example that you cited, one that's in the front of all of our memories, which is what happened in Iraq in 2002 and 2003. But they worry about what would happen if the U.S. made the mistake in the other direction. And remember that there have been more mistakes in the other direction of underestimating how close a country was to a weapon than there have been Iraq cases. There was an underestimate of the Soviets in 1949, a missing of the timing on the Chinese in 1963 and 64. They missed the Indians in 74, the Pakistanis and the Indians in the 80s. So to some degree, everybody's always trying to keep from making the last mistake that they've made. And in our case, the last mistake was Iraq, and it was a big one. But the previous mistakes were in the other direction. And that may have in part been what caused Iraq to be a problem.
Is there an important distinction between authorizing the use of force, as McConnell puts it, and war, the word the president used?
There can be, because you can authorize a use of force that's well short of a war. Now, the president did not go to Congress to get an authorization to do the bombing that took place in Libya last year and said that he really didn't need to because there were no ground troops involved. There was a brief flurry of people in Congress, including many Republicans, who said, in fact, you do need an authorization. That whole conflict was pretty much over before the issue came to a head. There is a question, though, about whether these authorizations authorizations, if they're not a formal war declaration, whether they mean very much, or could the president do that even without an authorization?
And I guess they could still authorize acts of war without authorizing war, but then you're starting to split hairs on semantics. I want to play...
Especially, Brian, in an era where a lot of the activity is covert. And, you know, if you believe that some of the activity against Iran has been covert, there hasn't been an explicit congressional authorization, but presumably some presidential findings.
In the clip of the president that we played, he was knocking back at the Republican presidential hopefuls who, he says, speak in irresponsible, bellicose ways about attacking Iran. And if you notice, toward the end of that clip, he said, but ultimately, when you press them on what their policies would be, what their actions would actually be, they're the same things that we're doing. So I want to play a clip of Mitt Romney from the other day talking about this, and then ask you, do you think Romney is saying the same thing as the president, just in different language?
This president failed to speak out when the dissidents took the streets in Tehran. He had nothing to say. This is a president who has failed to put in place crippling sanctions against Iran. He's also failed to communicate that military options are on the table, in fact, in our hand, and that it's unacceptable to America for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I will have those military options. I will take those crippling sanctions and put them in place, and I will speak out to the Iranian people about the peril of them becoming nuclear. It's pretty straightforward in my view. If Barack Obama gets reelected, Iran will have a nuclear weapon and the world will change if that's the case.
So the words are pretty different. But fact check the president's claim, David. Is Romney saying he would do basically the same thing as President Obama, but he's just putting it differently because it's campaign season?
You know, when I went down the checklist, and Helene Cooper, my colleague, wrote an interesting piece on this. It was in the Times the other day. Your listeners might want to go look up. When we went through this checklist, it looked to me like President Obama had started in 2009 when he came in doing all of the things that Mitt Romney suggested. He told the Iranian people and pretty clearly what the risks of having a nuclear weapon were, although obviously he hasn't accused them yet of having made the decision to do it. They've put together an extensive military plan. As you can imagine, this is what the Pentagon does for a living. There is considerable evidence that they have done a very active covert operation, much more active than what the Bush administration did. And the sanctions, which are all out in open, which in recent months have turned to sanctions against oil revenues, are by any measure much tougher than anything that the Bush administration got through. So is there more that can be done? Absolutely. And there are some that the administration's thinking of. But I didn't hear anything on Mr. Romney's list that I haven't heard over the past 2 or 3 years as I cover this day-to-day watching the administration.
We have a few minutes left with New York Times chief Washington correspondent and WNYC contributor David Sanger. What about the timing of what happened yesterday? The president holding a news conference about this on Super Tuesday. Little upstaging going on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was nothing accidental about that timing. And I think that there was nothing accidental about his effort to sort of portray himself as the somber and responsible one while a lot of people are out talking freely about war. And, you know, this is, to some degree, this is what happens in presidential campaigns. I mean, people say a lot of things in presidential campaigns that end up being difficult to go do. Now, President Obama went through a period of time where he said during his presidential campaign that he would talk without condition to the Iranians. And you'll remember that some of his opponents, including his current Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, said that that was pretty naive.
Yes. Well, not naive to hold a news conference on Super Tuesday. And we put a little poll on our webpage of the Super Tuesday, regarding the Super Tuesday timing of the news conference. So the question is, do you think it was a savvy political move to steal the spotlight, a petty, purely partisan move, or I assume it was pure coincidence? He probably didn't even realize the strange timing. You can go cast your vote at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And this is at least the second presidential campaign in a row where bombing Iran is an issue, as you mentioned. Remember John McCain 4 years ago? Listen.
I guess my question is, how many times do we have to prove that these people are blowing up people now, never mind if they get a nuclear weapon, When do we send them an airmail message to Tehran?
That old Beach Boys song, Bomberan. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway.
John McCain, one of his old hits. So this goes on and on, David Sanger, doesn't it?
It does, but you certainly have a sense, given where the nuclear program is in Iran now, that this president, President Obama, is likely to have to make some pretty big decisions this year, and certainly Prime Minister Netanyahu has made that clear. And that's simply a result of the physics, not the politics. Yeah. The Iranians at this point have produced enough low-enriched uranium that if they enriched it further, they could probably get about 4 weapons worth out of it. And they're moving a lot of their equipment into this deep underground site at Goom that would be very difficult for the Israelis to strike, and probably pretty difficult for the United States to strike as well.
In our last 30 seconds, can you see a scenario where this becomes a salient voting issue, where people actually make their choices? If Obama and the Republicans, including Romney, are going back and forth, somebody must think so. But the economy is supposed to be what everybody's choosing on. Is there any possibility that you see that this is actually going to become a salient voting issue?
It could well, and you know who has a vote in that? The Iranians. So if there's an incident in the Gulf, if there's a big surge in gas prices because people are concerned that oil's going to get cut off, if the Israelis act thinking that their best moment to act is before the election because President Obama would be under greater pressure to back them, all of those things could definitely affect the discussion leading up to the election and the polling results. And you could imagine it going either way. You could imagine this working to the president's advantage, and you could certainly imagine it working to his disadvantage.
Chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and WNYC contributor David Sanger. You can read his article in the paper today on how the U.S. and Israel view differently what the evidence would be of Iran actually having a bomb. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Stay with us.